Right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Diedrich Asante Muhammad, Director of the Racial Wealth Divide Initiative at the Corporation for Enterprise Development. And we've invited Mr. Muhammad here to talk about his group's new report titled The Ever-Growing Gap, Failing to Address the Status Quo Will Drive the Racial Wealth Divide for Centuries to Come. And appreciate you being here with us tonight, Diedrich. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks for having me.
First of all, say a bit about the work that you do at the Corporation for Enterprise Development.
Sure. Well, Corporation for Enterprise Development is a nonprofit that's been around since about 1979. It was founded with the idea that not only do low-income, low-wealth families need greater income, some type of greater benefits, employment, but they also need assets, that they need some type of wealth in order to truly strengthen the economy of low-wealth households, low-income households, and to create opportunity. And so they've been working on this idea of various ideas, whether it's through entrepreneurship, whether it's through children's savings accounts, various measures to strengthen the wealth development of low-income families. And a year ago, they recognized that they needed to have more of a focus on how race and assets and how those things are interconnected and the challenges that are posed to the racial inequality. So we started the Racial Wealth Divide Initiative and have been at CFPD over the last year working on this.
Well, thank you for spending time to talk about this report. As the new report states at the outset, our corporate media has been focused on the issue of the racial divide in the U.S. when it comes to the criminal justice system, and certainly with the rise of these videotapes we're seeing now about the realities for people in certain cities around our country, the reality of police violence. But rarely does our media or our politicians address the critical issue of racial economic inequality. And your new report, The Ever-Growing Gap, examines the racial wealth gap, which highlights some sobering statistics. And I wondered if you would summarize for our audience the headline here of this report, what you found.
Well, the overall point of the report, and I'll give you the kind of the numbers that everybody used, it's just that oftentimes when people think about race and racial inequality, they say, well, look, America's made a lot of progress, and there, you know, is truth that things have changed from 50 or 100 years ago, and that though things might not be moving as fast as people would like, we're on a path toward, you know, getting toward racial equality. And what this report is showing is that as it relates to racial economic inequality, that is not true, that we are on a path to ever-growing racial economic inequality. One of the numbers that is most often cited from the report is that if white wealth were to freeze, not grow at all, it would take over 200 years for African Americans to reach the wealth, the average wealth of white Americans, and would take Latinos over 80 years to reach the wealth of whites if wealth were frozen today for whites and kept growing at the rate that black and Latino wealth has been growing for the last 30 years. And, of course, no one wants white wealth to freeze. And so you can imagine that if, you know, one thing to break down how it's growing is in 2013, African Americans and Latinos had wealth that was about $500,000, average wealth, $500,000 less than white wealth. In 2043, 30 years from 2013, African Americans and Latinos will have about $1 million less in wealth if things continue as they have been for the last 30 years. So we are on a path of great racial economic inequality.
Thank you for that summary. Review for our audience, if you would, the causes of institutional inequality for African Americans and Latinos. That includes a harsh look at mortgage lending policies, government benefits, pay discrimination, and the like.
Well, you know, what many people fail to realize is that the United States as a middle-class economy is not something that has been true since the founding of the country. It's really something that started post-Great Depression with the New Deal and World War II, and that America became a middle-class economy, and it was really white America became a middle-class economy with massive government investments. That said, again, you saw in the New Deal and in programs related to World War II, like the GI Bill, which greatly helped cover the cost of higher education. Connected to the GI Bill, too, is massive home ownership opportunities. A partner in this report, Chuck Collins, talks about he knows in his family that his family took advantage of the GI Bill. He's white, and that his family received a 40-year mortgage at 1%. You know, like that type of subsidy to home ownership. And that's when, for the first time in America's history, the majority of whites were homeowners. And what happened, of course, obviously at that time, you had great legal racial segregation. African Americans weren't able to take advantage of that in the same way Native Americans, a small amount of Latinos in the country, also usually weren't able to take advantage of those opportunities. And so we had a fairly progressive economy where those who were at the bottom were growing at rates equal to, if not sometimes faster than, higher income Americans. But then as after the 60s and the civil rights movement, and African Americans had fought to become, and African Americans and people of color as a whole had fought to become more inclusive of government policies, you saw a lot of these government investments no longer existing or being cut back, and you saw an overall regressive economy. So, you know, there hasn't been an opportunity. America's never invested in a middle-class economy that was inclusive to all. And I think that is why, that's one of the main reasons we see the great disparity that still exists today. We also see that for the last 30 years, America has been an economy where the rich get richer and the middle class and lower income are losing ground. And that's been affecting everyone, and that has helped to solidify and strengthen racial economic inequality.
Diedrich Asante Mohammed is our guest, director of the Racial Wealth Divide Initiative at the Corporation for Enterprise Development. We're talking about the new report from his group called The Ever-Growing Gap. And, Diedrich, I wanted to ask you about the importance of home ownership. Your report points out that whites own homes at the rate of about 70%. Versus 45% for Latino families and 40% for African American families. How important is home ownership to the accumulation of wealth overall for families, and why is it so important?
Yes, well, home ownership is the number one source of wealth for Americans as a whole. And, you know, I think the reason that is true is that, one, everybody has to pay, or most everyone has to pay for some type of housing. And when you have home ownership, you have the opportunity to put down a fairly small deposit, you know, anywhere from usually around 3% to 10% down to get an asset worth, you know, anywhere from, let's say, 150 to, you know, it can be as high as you want it, but let's say, you know, $350,000, $500,000. And there's not many assets that have a return, even though it's a relatively small return, a return where you can put down a deposit and then get something that's 10 times or more the value of that asset. So, again, you know, if you put down 5% for a $300,000 house, and even if your house only goes up in value 1% a year, that's $3,000 a year you're making in return. And it's also kind of a forced savings plan. Again, everybody's going to be paying rent or what have you. Now, when you know, paying that rent, it's kind of going toward the value of your home. So you actually have an asset if you're able to pay off that mortgage. So it's one of the few kind of, it's one of the few, regular daily costs that we have to pay that actually has a return. Even though stock market and other things have greater returns, that is not a cost you'd be regularly paying day to day, you know, buying stock. Everybody has to pay for some type of housing cost. If you have enough savings and credit where you can get a home, it does make a pretty safe and strong way of returning on investment.
And I'd like for you to also review for us issues such as the lack of retirement savings that many in the African American and Latino community lack as compared to their white counterparts. And issues of global trade, which is also mentioned as one of the sources of this growing inequality between people, but particularly between whites and communities of color.
Yeah, I mean, again, my partner in this, or one of my partners in this report, Chuck Collins, always talks about how wealth is, you know, kind of brings history to the present and actually kind of brings history into the future. What we mean by that is that, you know, the kind of wealth, the assets you develop over time, so much of that comes from what happened to past generations. And because of past generations of discrimination, African-Americans and Latinos, you know, don't have the same type of wealth, which oftentimes means they're not in the same type of neighborhoods that have good education, that have good connections in getting good living wage jobs with benefits. And so and so you're kind of stuck in a trap where you aren't in a community where you might have those type of connections, have those types of resources. You're much more likely to be in a job without benefits. And all of that, makes it that much more of a challenge to develop wealth over the time. And then, too, for the last 30 years, we were seeing, you know, again, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, pensions were much more prevalent. And so you had a much more, more likely to have a secure retirement. Over the last 30 years, you see less and less of that. And you're lucky if your employer puts a little in your 401k. You don't get the same type of defined benefit, the same type of return, which is making, again, racial inequality an issue harder and harder to deal with. You find that actually racial wealth inequality grows as people get older, because that is the time where the benefits of the past, whether it's, you know, kind of receiving some type of inheritance or even being able to be a homeowner or having a job with benefits, that all pays off more later in life. You see that disparity growing over time.
Deidre Kasanti Mohammed is our guest here on Counterpoint, WPKN. He's director of Racial Wealth Divide Initiative at the Corporation for Enterprise Development. And we're talking about the report titled The Ever-Growing Gap. And it's all about the widening racial divide in our country in terms of wealth. Tell us a bit about the policy prescriptions that your report recommends for reversing the growing inequality, and specifically racial inequality across the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we note is that we have an upside-down tax system. And actually, let me first state that, you know, oftentimes people hear about these problems and they, you know, think, well, you know, we don't have a whole bunch of money to help deal with this issue, so there's really no way that we're going to, you know, have a policy prescription to this. But one thing this report highlights is that America already invests over $600 billion a year in wealth and asset development. And just the problem is they invest that over $500 billion a year in mostly wealthy people. So actually America's spending over $600 billion a year in concentrating wealth among the richest. If we could take these different types of tax subsidies, for home ownership, for even pensions, and make sure that they actually go to much more so low and moderate wealth families, then we have a system where actually investing in those that need wealth development and helping to bridge wealth inequality overall, and that would have a very strong impact, particularly in the African-American Latino community. So we need to stop investing in greater inequality and make those investments go to greater equality for all Americans, including African-Americans, Latinos, Native Americans, and Asian Americans who are low wealth.
You know, I wanted to ask you a question about the election coming up, but one more question just in terms of the effect of this rising inequality across the country. That's general, and what we're talking about tonight, rising racial inequality. What, in your view, is the net effect of this really wide gap between communities of color and the majority white population in the United States in terms of the fabric of our society? What are the effects that you're concerned about currently, but also in the future, as this gap gets wider and wider if it's not addressed?
Well, I think one thing we have to look at is, you know, what's what makes it especially dangerous. It's not even just that it's causing greater, it's maintaining great racial division. Because, you know, it's been interesting that as people of color have gotten more legal rights, they're having less and less, equality economically and in many ways, having challenges around economic opportunity. So it's kind of, you've been having two different things pulling, you know, more legal opportunity, but, a more regressive economy, which has sometimes kept things stagnant and for some, has actually made things worse in terms of racial inequality. But then we also have to look at that. I was talking about 2043. 2043 is when it is projected that the majority of the United States will be people of color. So, you know, this won't just be a problem of racial inequality and racial disparity. I see this as the number one threat to the American economy, because you can't have a strong middle class economy if a plurality of the population are now not homeowners, right? If Black and Latinos are still around 40% homeowners, that's a serious problem. If Blacks and Latinos have, and they're projected to have, less than $1,000 in median wealth in 2043, and that's a large part of the population, that's going to be a serious challenge to the American economy. You're not going to have stable middle-class households, and everyone talks about how the majority, how over 70% of the economy is fueled by consumerism. You're not going to have a strong consumer engine if median wealth for such a large part of the population is under $1,000. So it's going to have serious effects, not just on greater, it'll have greater divisions, but then it'll make the country as a whole more economically insecure, which I think then, again, will even more greatly strengthen divisions, because people always have a lot less tolerance when they are less financially secure.
And this year is really strange election campaign. We've seen the storyline of angry white voters who are flocking to support Donald Trump, a billionaire, ironically as that is, a billionaire, who regularly scapegoats immigrants and people of color for the condition of the country, where there's the perception that working class white folks without a college degree are slipping, and of course the middle class is slipping. But what are your observations, given your research here, on the realities of this growing racial divide, where communities of color are really losing out big time, to this story of the angry white voter?
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, some people have tried to say the angry white voter is a story of this kind of class, you know, class division, class resentment. But if that was completely true, and if it just meant because you were losing out economically that Trump would be more appealing to you, well, then African Americans, Latinos, Native Americans would be the number one supporter of Trump, because they're the ones who have lost the most since the Great Recession. Now, it is true that no racial group of Americans has returned to the wealth of like 2006, right? White Americans still aren't at the median wealth they were back in 2006. But what we do know is that white Americans have bounced back partially from the low wealth of 2010, and have seen their wealth increase in 2013. African Americans and Latinos have actually continued to see a decline. So they're actually worse off than they were at the height of the Great Recession as it relates to median wealth. So, you know, we do have this kind of irony of talking about people who are losing ground and they're angry, and that's why they're joining Trump. But those who have lost the most ground aren't rallying behind Trump. And again, I think it shows how racial resentment, kind of mixes with economics, but doesn't even give a true picture of, you know, where people truly are situated economically.
Now, Donald Trump talks about improving the economy, by boasting that he would create millions and millions of jobs, so many jobs you'll be sick of the jobs, or whatever he says. But I'm wondering, from your perspective, in looking at what Donald Trump says, as well as Hillary Clinton, the Republican and Democratic Party nominees, what of substance are they saying that addresses this growing racial inequality across the country?
Yeah, I have yet to see, though Donald Trump did do a speech recently that he was considering as an outreach for African Americans, but I didn't notice any clear policy outside of saying that he was going to create jobs, and I think sometimes he talks about creating jobs by cutting taxes. But again, when he's talking about cutting taxes, he usually means cutting taxes for the wealthiest Americans. And that's been something that we've been trying for the last 40 years, and we haven't seen any breach of economic inequality. We've actually seen a growth. So again, a challenge with Trump is he's oftentimes not very specific at all as it relates to policy, so it's hard to pin him down. But I haven't seen particularly any policy papers as it relates to bridging racial economic inequality. I will say that Hillary Clinton, actually, I was kind of surprised as I was looking at her. I think it's called Breaking the Barriers document, talking about the economy, what needs to be done to deal with the economy. And she does use the frame of racial inequality throughout her economic paper. I was impressed with that, but I think, you know, my critique of Hillary's piece is that she talks about a $250 billion economic plan over 10 years. Well, as I highlighted, the United States is spending over $600 billion a year. That's further concentrating wealth. So a program that's only spending about $25 billion a year versus $600 billion is not going to be enough. So we need to have a stronger attack on these issues of economic inequality and racial economic inequality.
Deidre Asante Mohammed is our guest, director of the Racial Wealth Divide Initiative at the Corporation for Enterprise Development. And we're talking about the report, The Ever-Growing Gap, and we'll give people a link so they can read that on their own as we conclude in a few minutes. But, Deidre, I wanted to ask you about one recommendation that you had for addressing income and wealth inequality and of course, the growing racial divide. And that was to put in place an evidence-based government-wide audit of policies to analyze the net effect on inequality.
Yes, no, this is something that was even discussed, though it was shot down during the American Recovery Reinvestment Act when Obama was putting in his first several hundred billion dollar plan to help get the kind of stimulus to help get the economy going again in the midst of the Great Recession. And it was put forward that, you know, we need to, you know, whether it's Hillary Clinton's, you know, reinvesting in America or Donald Trump's reinvesting in America, there needs to be an analysis before you do the programs and policies of what type of effects can you project these policies will have on various communities. And this type of work has been done. Scholars like Tom Shapiro have been doing different types of what they call racial wealth gap audit, examining policies and saying, okay, well, we do expect this policy to have an effect that would help bridge inequality or racial economic inequality. This type of policy might actually broaden it. Things like getting rid of all college debt. You know, a lot of people would be excited about that, but if it was just all college, all higher education debt, that actually would broaden racial wealth inequality because a disproportionate amount of whites are not just in higher education, but might have master's programs or might have PhD programs. So if you wanted to do something that actually helps deal with more low-wealth households, it should be much more focused on undergrad and maybe having some type of dollar cap because, of course, lower-income people, you know, oftentimes aren't spending as much on higher education. So there are important ways that you can reduce college debt that would do something that would be most beneficial to those who are subsidized, those who we most want to subsidize, meaning lower wealth, lower income households. But you need to do analysis ahead of time to make sure your policy is actually helping address the problem and not making it worse.
Well, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you for sharing your analysis in this report, The Ever-Growing Gap, with our audience tonight. And, Deidre, maybe I could have you leave our audience with the web link so they can find this report for themselves and read it in depth. Certainly important elements for us to all understand, particularly in this election year.
Yeah, no, great. Yes, they can check it out at CFED.org. You will find the Racial Wealth Divide Report. You also, we have a Facebook page where we highlight best policies, best practices, and issues around racial wealth inequality on Facebook. You just put on Bridging the Racial Wealth Divide. And we have a podcast where we talk to national experts and local practitioners about ways to deal with these issues. And you can find that just by wherever you listen to a podcast, look for Race and Wealth, the Race and Wealth Podcast. So all those spaces are ways we can share more information about these issues.
Repeat the website one more time.
Sure. CFED.org.
Okay.
The Facebook is Bridging the Racial Wealth Divide, and the podcast is Race and Wealth.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your really important work here and for being on our program tonight. Thanks, DJ.
Well, thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Diedrich Asante-Mohammed, Director of the Racial Wealth Divide Initiative at the Corporation for Enterprise Development, CFED.org. You can find the report there. Again, it's called The Ever-Growing Gap.